My guest at this time is Inez Stepman. She is Director of the Education and Workforce Development Task Force at the American Legislative Exchange Council. She's also a senior contributor to The Federalist, where this week she wrote that this point from President Trump's State of the Union address on Tuesday was one of the most important but least talked about lines of the speech.
So tonight I call on Congress to empower every cabinet secretary with the authority to reward good workers and to remove federal employees who undermine the public trust or fail the American people.
So, how badly is the civil service within the federal government messed up? How is it impacting our daily lives? And how does it realistically get fixed? And Inez, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, President Trump led into that point by discussing how he signed legislation last year, making it easier to fire corrupt or incompetent staff at the Department of Veterans Affairs. But even that has been like pulling teeth despite a huge scandal. So just how entrenched are these bureaucrats in all of these federal departments?
Absolutely. So I think the average American has very little idea how difficult it actually is to fire a federal worker. The process is usually over 300 days long. It includes two appeals that are conducted at the same standard of proof as a civil trial. That means there's a discovery period. You can call witnesses and you can call Bob across the cubicle and say, no, Bob says I'm doing a great job. Why are you firing me? Right? So there's obviously an efficiency problem here, and there are some fixes I think that might garner some bipartisan support for that efficiency element of it. But I also think that it's a deeper constitutional problem, right? We have 2.8 million federal workers all over the country, but many of them in D.C., and they have very little political accountability. They stay in office no matter who the people vote in or what those policies that the voters want to be enacted. The bulk of the federal workforce stays the same, and they're incredibly biased.
And as you point out in the piece, that this goes back to 1883 in an effort to remove politics from civil service within the federal government. But obviously that has changed over time. We probably don't have enough time to go step by step over the past 135 years. But what's the big shift into this becoming like another branch of the government?
Right. I think that the spoil system, people talked about the spoil system prior to the 1880s when we, quote unquote, reformed civil service. I think we have a very distorted view of what that was like. There were certainly corruptions, and there were certainly office selling and all kinds of things, but there's corruption today. The main arguments that were advanced at the time was this was going to make the civil service merit-based, and it was going to make the civil service apolitical. And what we see is that neither of those things are the case. Nobody would accuse the federal government of being particularly efficient and meritous, right, and hiring based on merit these days. And then the second part of it is also not true, right? We have the Hill released FEC statistics during the election that 95% of the donations over $200 that were made by federal employees went to Hillary Clinton in 2016. It was 99% at the State Department. Right? That's not an apolitical civil service. That's a civil service that has its own interests in growing government. And we're talking now about millions of people who have, you know, kind of make decisions for the American people where the voters have absolutely no control over whether they stay or go. The president has very little control over the vast majority of the staff of his own executive branch. That's a problem. That's a constitutional problem, and it's an efficiency problem.
Well, and it's certainly a problem when most of those people don't like you, as we've seen in various places where they won't put his picture up in one veteran's office. I think that was down in Florida. You talk in your piece about how folks at the EPA were already launching reports about why Scott Pruitt was a terrible choice to lead the EPA. But over the years, obviously, people come into these positions when Republicans are in office and when Democrats are in office. So how is it that this bureaucracy seems to be almost entirely liberal?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, right? It could be because people who lean left are more frequently go into government service. But I think it actually has a lot to do with the fact that they, once you've been in the federal bureaucracy for a long time, you now have an interest in continuing to grow and continuing to fund your department. And so a lot of it, I think, is self-interest, right? Which is the party that is more likely to grow and fund the federal departments? Well, it's the Democratic Party. So I think a lot of it is self-interest. But as you said, it can cause real problems for Republican administrations. In fact, Reagan spent a lot of his 8 years fighting his own departments to a standstill, right? And I think it accounts for a lot of what increasingly to American voters seems like it doesn't matter who you elect, a Republican, Democrat, government continues to grow. A lot of the same things keep happening under any administration. I think that permanent bureaucracy has a lot to do with that. And you can see, even in instances where President Trump is trying to shake something up, oftentimes he's dealing with a flood of leaks, right? He's dealing with really openly rebellious staff in most of his departments. And those people, I think most people don't realize, those people cannot be fired. Donald Trump can't say, oh, you are obviously trying to slow walk my policy in, say, the EPA. It's time for you to go. I'm going to get somebody. If you can't get in line with the program the American people voted for, it's time to get someone else. He can't do that, nor can any other president. Bill Clinton complained about the same thing, right? So that's a problem for our democracy. It's a problem for our republic, and it's definitely a constitutional problem.
This will be the last depressing question that I ask you. And as it's easy to get for folks to get upset when an American veteran, for example, is getting the runaround on their health care and in some cases badly needed care, and it costs them their life. But how does the unaccountable bureaucracy impact the rest of us in other ways that might not be so glaring and raise the ire of folks so much?
I mean, I think just the general inefficiency, right? The bureaucracies cannot get rid of bad workers, right? We have actual agency heads, even sometimes liberal agency heads, complaining to Congress that begging for the power over their own workforces, because unlike in the private sector, you can't get rid of someone who's a problem consistently over 10 years. In fact, the guy who believed the drill in Hawaii and then sent out that horrible message that said basically everyone duck and cover, there's a nuclear missile on the way to Hawaii, that guy was known to be a problem in the department for 10 years, but you can't get rid of someone like that under our current civil service laws. So I think that's the way that it impacts us the most directly as average citizens. It's just dealing with the utter, you know, intransigence and incompetence of federal employees. I think almost anyone who's ever tried to apply for a passport, who's ever tried, you know, to go to the DMV, has ever tried to go to, you know, almost any government outlet, since this is a problem at the state level as well, has been frustrated with how slow and incompetent government employees seem to be. And this has a lot to do with that.
We're talking with Inez Stettman of the American Legislative Exchange Council. And Inez, if I remember correctly, Congress had to take two different stabs at this in terms of legislation to fix what's going on at the VA. And we'll see ultimately how much progress they make here. So obviously they didn't get everything they wanted in that first piece of legislation. So in an effort to get this right on the first crack for the rest of these departments, what power do cabinet secretaries exactly need to get rid of the troublemakers and the deadwood?
I mean, I think the ultimate solution would be to go and shift the federal workforce over time to a more at-will workforce, just like most private businesses today. That's a long way off from happening, but it has happened in some states. So the state of Georgia actually, about a couple decades ago, started all their new hires were going to be at will. They couldn't do much about the union contracts from the past, but all their new hires were going to be at will. And now their civil service is about 88%, 90% at will and functioning a lot better than most other states. So it's not a totally out there idea, but I do think it'll take us some time to get there. This VA law is a step in the right direction. I think an easy first step would be to take the exact same language from that VA bill that was passed bipartisanly, overwhelmingly for both parties, and just say, hey, why is this only good for the VA? Don't you want the Department of Education or, you know, the Department of Energy to have the ability to cultivate a good workforce as well? So I think that would be a pretty good first step in the right direction, would be to use that same language that gives managers a little more leeway, a few more reasons to fire people, and a streamlined process to get people out the door that doesn't include so many appeals. I think that would be a good first step in the right direction.
And as two-part exit question here, first of all, how big of a priority do you get the sense this is for the administration, given the resistance they're getting from so many of their civil service employees? And given what you said about the bipartisan support for the VA version of this bill, do you think this would pass pretty easily for all the other departments?
Well, it's hard to say because you will get pushback from organized interests, right? You will get pushback from representatives of government employees. And I think part of the problem is we really haven't publicized this issue enough. So there's no pushback on the other side. In fact, this is the first major coverage. President Trump saying this as part of the State of the Union is the first major coverage this issue has received outside of super wonky circles. So I think it's important that we keep informing the American people about the fact that federal employees now enjoy so many job protections that most Americans do not at their jobs. So, I mean, I think that's a large part of how important this priority will be to the Trump administration. I think if the people show that this is something they want, I think it'll be a higher priority. Thus far, it's kind of up in the air. I haven't seen many concrete moves from the administration, but they might just be playing it close to the vest. I hope they do.
Well, we'll certainly be watching. As we learned on Tuesday night, there's plenty of priorities for this administration. We'll see how high up on the list this one ends up stacking for this Congress. Inez, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Inez Stettman is Director of the Education and Workforce Development Task Force at the American Legislative Exchange Council. She's also a senior contributor to The Federalist. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.